Hello and welcome to the Goalkeepers Union podcast Between the Sticks. Me, Matt Beadle, here with the cigar-smoking voice of goalkeeping, Richard Lee.
Good afternoon, Matthew. I feel like you might be running out of things to call me.
There's always a word somewhere, Richard, and we will find it.
Yeah, well, I thought this would have been a gallivanting, but I feel like you've used that. And I know you don't like to use the same one twice. So cigar smoking is what you've gone with.
Yes, we never double up, of course. But cigar smoking is just a term to explain your lifestyle at the moment. You're not smoking cigars. I don't know, maybe you are, but I'm pretty sure you're not doing that because I've just seen a picture of you over Zoom, because right now we are doing this over the medium of Zoom because you are not here, my friend. Where are you?
This is true. I am in Dubai, of all places. So this is the equivalent of a footballer's summer holiday, I guess. It always used to be last game of the season. You'd come in a couple of days after, you'd have your meeting with the manager, you'd drive out the car park, and that was you done for normally 5 to 8 weeks, depending on the break that you got. And then that's when everyone would shoot off, go abroad and do what they do. Obviously, things have changed slightly now, and it is quite a busy time during the summer with lots of movement, certainly lots of goalkeepers on the move this summer. So this effectively is the quiet time, the downtime at the start of September. The window has closed, and that means that there is the opportunity to have a week or so abroad, Matthew.
I.e., have a week abroad, vis-a-vis having it off right now. You are living the life at the moment.
I am currently, and I'm not just saying this to make you jealous, but I am sat by a balcony, not on the balcony, because that might affect the sound quality. But I think I'm on the 20th floor, got quite a nice view. Sun is just setting, probably sets in about an hour or so. I feel very relaxed. This could be a very, very relaxed podcast, I think.
As zen as Kelvin Davies. Remember that one? I think that was the most zen. I think he just popped a few codeine, hadn't he? He'd done his back in the shower, and it felt like he was reclined on his sofa throughout the entire interview.
Funny you say that, actually. Not even joking. I actually did hurt my back yesterday, so I haven't done a lot today. I told you about my CrossFit adventures. I've mentioned it more than once. And yeah, I took it a little bit too far yesterday. So maybe that's the reason. I have been lying down most of the day. But yes, I am ready, though. I have researched. You've sent me all the footage. I've gone through it in detail. I've made copious notes. I am good to go.
Okay. Without further ado, in that case, on with the show.
Let's do it.
So there were internationals, of course, a bit of EFL action too. We're going to get onto that. But first, we'll start with England beating Hungary and Andorra. We'll start with Hungary. Jordan Pickford, another clean sheet for his country. And Peter Gulácsi, he made a good few saves for Hungary. We saw him in the Euros, very good. We've seen him at Leipzig, very good over the course of the past two seasons. But at fault for the third and fourth goals.
Yeah, he did. He did make several saves. Do you know the interesting thing for me? All three saves had similarities. What I liked about them, we'll talk about the not so good stuff in a second. But what I liked about the saves was that he does make the player have to beat you. You know, you see sometimes it can be very easy to be drawn in, look to do a long barrier, look to spread. What he tends to do is stay that little bit deeper. He is a big guy, so you know he covers a lot of the goal regardless. And he does make the striker try to beat him, which obviously Harry Kane tried on a couple of occasions, made saves with his feet. But they were all reasonably similar in that he takes up a good set position, is a few yards from the ball, turns it into a shooting scenario and made good saves, in fairness. That being said, the couple of moments that weren't so good, I can't help but feel that it's almost a little bit to do with the fact that he is a big goalkeeper and certainly doesn't come across as being overly quick. And I don't want to be too mean about him here because, you know, in fairness, like you said, we've seen loads and loads of positives from him and there were certainly positives in this game, but you just felt like getting down quickly, sometimes that could be that little bit more difficult when you've got the kind of size that he has. And both goals just slightly, I'll talk about the fourth first, and that was where I felt a little bit sorry for him because he was unsighted, it has to be said. If you actually look at when the ball struck, he's got three men in front of him. The ball's whipped round, so he doesn't see it until late. And then it's that speed to get down. And the question is, do you go with your foot, which in hindsight might have made more sense? Once he decided to go with his hands, you really have to collapse so, so quickly. Obviously, wasn't able to do it. It doesn't look great because it kind of squirms through him. The third was slightly different, but similar in the fact that it was getting down at speed. Where I'll then give him a little bit of a defense is that he was surrounded by England players. So it was one of these, I think, even if he parries it, it would have been very difficult parry to get it into a safe area because he did have players pretty much all around him. But what he effectively does, and the term that I'm going to use is a term that my old goalkeeper coach used to say to me a lot, Mr. Kevin Hitchcock, which was to twist the hands. You know, so you then go from that position where effectively you're looking to scoop or cup to then twist it so you've got a W and then you go to your left, he didn't quite twist the hands, got himself in a bit of a muddle, and in the end was only able to parry it or palm it into the corner, unfortunately.
Okay, moving on to Andorra. Sam Johnston in for the win over Andorra. Two games for his country now, two shutouts for his country now. I was counting in this one, and I think it was about 10 to 11 touches that he had throughout the 90 minutes. Now, this is one of those classic ones, isn't it, where you come off the pitch, quiet one for you today. Now, of course, against Andorra, he wasn't threatened whatsoever, but sometimes that can actually make the game a little bit more tricky.
It can, and to be honest, for me, and I'm sure a lot of goalkeepers will agree with me on this, they're sometimes the worst ones to play in because the level of expectation is so high. And by the way, he did exactly what you would have hoped he would do. And he's came out with effectively a 10 out of 10, as far as I'm concerned. But I say that based on the fact that he's barely touched it, but when he did touch it, he kept possession, et cetera, et cetera. The problem is, if you do something not quite so good, or you were to concede a goal, then of course you could get all sorts of criticism. So it's kind of one of those games, you know, regardless of what you do, it's very, very unlikely that you're ever going to make the headlines. Always remember a classic one. I'm pretty sure you might be able to correct me on this, but I think it was England against, I want to say San Marino, and I know that you're going to correct me now, so I might have got this wrong, where Richard Wright made one of his only appearances for England, and he actually gave away two penalties. I believe he saved the second penalty, but I just remember the headlines the next day that it was highly criticizing him for his performance. But I remember feeling the same sort of thing then, that the game that he was playing in was a no-win type of scenario. Now, I say it's no win, don't get me wrong. You got an England cap to your name, which is always a win of sorts. But when you're playing in these games, again, the level of expectation is so high. So go on, you're going to correct me?
I'm going to guess, actually. I'm going to say I think it's Malta. It might have been Malta.
Ooh,
but I can't be sure about that. I can't be sure.
I'll tell you what we do, because we could now spend the next sort of minute or so Googling it and just waste everybody's time. Or what we could do is during the next interval we have, we could Google it then.
Thriller minute stuff here on the Goalkeepers Union podcast, mate. Okay, we'll do just that.
The other point that you actually mentioned to me in our messages that we exchanged was Sam Johnson's national anthem. I don't think many people would have pointed that out, but that did make me smile. It was like watching Steps back in the day. That's what it made me think of. Or S Club 7, maybe, where just completely out of sync. Maybe I'm not being so nice to S Club 7 there, actually. Some of their music was great. But I really felt for Sam Johnson because he was massively out of sync.
Some of their music was great, S Club 7. Okay, I'm going to quote that one. That's a pin is stuck in that one to come out at a later podcast. But yes, it was funny, wasn't it? I think I was actually listening to it in all ways with the national anthem. The fans and the coaches and the team, they're all out of sync with each other. And whoever's singing the national anthem, she's well ahead or he's well ahead. The orchestra are well ahead. It's never, ever in sync. But normally the players together are in sync, but for some reason Sam Johnston was just slightly ahead of everybody else. So when the camera panned across him, he was just finishing the last line as they were finishing the penultimate line, and so he ended up holding the Queen note for about 5 seconds just to try and stay with the others.
Yeah, it was very, very amusing. But the main thing, big message we sent to Sam is, look, don't stop, never give up, hold your head high and reach the top.
Very good. Okay, let's talk penalties, because Gavin Batsunu with a huge penalty save from Cristiano Ronaldo. It would have been arguably one of the biggest penalty saves from Cristiano Ronaldo had he not then scored twice in the final moments.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I mean, the goals, by the way, first and foremost, phenomenal headers, weren't they? No chance for Batsunu. But look, he's making a bit of a name for himself, and it was a very, very good save. I know we've spoke about this before, and I often reference the penalty that I faced against Cristiano Ronaldo. And what Batsunu did is what I remember myself doing until I watched the replay and realized that I actually dived the wrong way. But Batsunu, credit to him, he's done his research. For me, it was the timing of the dive. Look, the power that he shows, the movement, the spring, the speed, but it was the timing. Because I think if you go slightly earlier than that, Ronaldo's clever enough that he will watch you to a point. And then there becomes a point where then he just goes and fires it. So he's timed the dive perfectly. And because of that, he's effectively got right into the corner. It wasn't a poor penalty at all, as far as I'm concerned. It's going right in the corner. But Batsunu certainly showed just how powerful he is.
On to another penalty save, this time made by Bailey Peacock-Farrell of Northern Ireland. A crucial stop to deny Arvydas Novikovas of Lithuania. It was 2-1 at the time. And this was Northern Ireland's first competitive win inside 90 minutes since June 2019. They went on to win the game 4-1. He's getting good from 12 yards, isn't he?
I'm enjoying him at the moment. That's probably the expression that I would use. He looks very, very confident. It's great so far, the loan that he's had to Sheffield Wednesday. You know, I know there was a couple of eyebrows raised when he's gone to League One, albeit a huge, huge club in League One. But certainly when he had performed at the top end for Leeds, obviously Burnley been in and around it, you wouldn't necessarily see somebody go to a League One club. However, I think the fact he's gone there, he started so well at Sheffield Wednesday, and he's playing in a big environment there every week, big crowds, really built himself back up again. And I know he made the penalty save as well, didn't he, for Sheffield Wednesday the other day. You could just see it in him. He's certainly brimming with confidence, and it is. It's an excellent save, and it's a big save in a big moment. Once again, I'd compliment him on the timing of the dive, and technically very good, very powerful. But you can just see the look in his face when they zoomed in on him straight away afterwards. You can just see that steely determination that he has now.
Yeah, he's now saved 4 of the 12 he's faced throughout his career. He was also the hero, wasn't he, in that shootout in the Euros playoff game with Bosnia. And another hero at the Euros was Jan Sommer, up to his old tricks again for Switzerland, and another penalty save from Italy's Jorginho.
Lots of penalties this week, and I'd certainly give anybody credit if they can save a Jorginho penalty. Interestingly, you kind of feel now more and more people that are watching him are going with a similar strategy. No one goes early anymore. They're waiting. Now, for Sommer, what I wrote down in my notes here was that he's just so light on his toes. You watch him move, and he actually does a subtle movement to his right just before Jorginho strikes it, which is why then Jorginho tries to put it to his left. Now, I think I might have discussed this on the podcast before, but what you'll often find, if the goalkeeper doesn't move at all, the taker will look to pull it across themselves, very similar to what he did against England in the Euro final. And of course, Pickford saved that one. But the difference was Pickford didn't move at all, went late and made the save. Sommer has moved and certainly made him believe that he's going to go the other way, and then managed to come back on himself and make, in the end, a very comfortable save. But that's because of just how light he is on his toes and the speed at which he was able to go back on himself in order to make the save. So I thought that was very, very good. And then he made arguably an even better one soon after that. And it's only when you see the replay from behind the goal that you realise just how good a save it is down to his left. And the main reason being the deflection. So he's able to get his hand down, make the save, not necessarily get it into the area that he wants to get it in. The ball then is seemingly looping over his head and may well just bobble into the goal. But the speed at which he manoeuvres his body, gets back, catches the ball, again, very impressive.
Absolutely. And to finish, Richard, we are going to focus on, when I say finish, I mean the international stuff. Alireza Behrangvand. This is the Iranian goalkeeper. Now, we know all about him. We've seen him at the World Cup. We've seen him play in Europe, actually, over recent years. And we know about his long throw, but it was just highlighted again this week. It was Iran v Syria in a World Cup qualifier. They won the game 1-0, but he launched it. This went viral on Twitter, over social media, as it always does when he seems to play. Must have been around, I don't know, 60 to 80 yards. Incredible throw.
Yeah, I saw this, and if I'm honest, it actually upset me a little bit, because I'm pretty sure that throw, the one that's gone viral, is actually much further than I was ever able to kick a goal kick, which, by the way, I don't think I'm alone here. I'm sure that there's quite a few of you out there that have seen it and kind of felt the same thing, almost feel a little bit inferior.
Okay, well, he has got a very good story, hasn't he? I was reading an article on him. It was a Guardian article from quite a while ago, to be fair, just before the 2018 World Cup. This was written by Benham Jafarzadeh. We'll put this on our Twitter. It is old, but it's worth a read anyway. And it says, this is one excerpt from it that I'll quickly read out now. Behrangvand was born in Sarabias, Loristan, to a nomad family always on the move around the countryside to find grassland for their sheep. Alireza was the eldest child, so it was normal that he worked from an early age to help them. His first job was shepherding, and whenever he found free time, he played football and Dal Paran, a local game, with his friends. Now, this is the crucial bit. Dal Paran involves throwing stones over long distances. So there you go. That is what he attributes his long throw success to.
Well, there you go. There are often, I've known a couple of lads who have had long throw-ins. And actually, similarly, there was one of the lads in particular, there was a story about an injury he had, and he spent however long it was on crutches and really built up his shoulders, back, etc. So you often find there is a story like this that sits behind. As much as, I mean, look, this could get us into a conversation about nature, nurture, and how best you can maximise your potential doing anything. But I do find it really, really interesting when you hear stories like that. And it does just make you think whether there are, I suppose, different ways in which you can train in order to maximise different areas of your game.
Now on to the EFL. Not a whole load of games this week, of course, because it has been international week, but we're going to start in League One. And Nick Zanev with yet another decent performance for AFC Wimbledon in their first ever league win over Oxford. A massive save at 1-1 in that game.
Yeah, a couple of really good saves to talk of here. The first one I enjoyed because they showed a replay and you could just see his expression after he's made the save. Reason being, they gave a goal kick. So it's a shot from distance down to his left, fingertips. I think it might have even clipped the post on the way round. You know, brilliant, brilliant save. And the fact that the ref gave the goal kick, I think it was James Henry that had the strike. You can see how frustrated he was. But just how pleased Nick Zanev was. And then arguably a better save followed, or certainly a very different save, where he's come out and spread. And the thing that I liked about this, he's had to travel a long distance. So he's over on the left-hand side of his goal. He's moved all the way to the right-hand side at pace, executed the spread perfectly. And it's one of those lovely ones that as he's made the save, it's hit his forearm effectively. Kind of reminds me of a Peter Schmeichel-esque save back in the day. I can't think which one I've got in mind, but it was very much the technique that Peter Schmeichel used to use. And he made himself so big and then the ball cannoned to safety. So yes, another very good performance from him.
Toby Savin in for Accrington. James Trafford currently sidelined. A good first half stop from a Tom Bloxham volley. Nearly, very nearly an assist in the second half for Sean McConville. He was denied by an equally impressive Marco Morosi. Six saves from him in this one.
Yeah, this is an interesting one for me. Of course, James Trafford, who's with the England squad at the moment. I mean, it's obviously one of the other reasons so many games were called off. It just shows you how many League One, League Two teams have international players, given the lack of fixtures. But of course, Accrington did decide, or maybe they weren't given the decision, given that it was likely only James Trafford, but they did go ahead with their game. And this will be good for Toby Savin because he did so well last season and he's done really well this season when he's been given the chance. And once again, to step in, it's always tough to step in. Certainly when the other goalkeeper's been doing as well as James Trafford has been doing, it's fair to say. Sometimes you almost feel like you're stepping in and it can be tough to live up to the performances before, but he certainly did that. Very good save to his right. What I liked about this was just the way in which he turned in, took up a very good position, gave himself plenty of reaction time, dived to his right, full stretch, double hands, round the post. Really, really top save. And then, yeah, nearly did have an assist. And it was a bit of an odd one, really, because where he ends up clearing it and where the shot ends up taking place, you might question whether Morosi could have come and met the ball a little bit earlier, because it does get all the way to about the 6 yard line or so, but it is on the angle and it's certainly a bit of an awkward one from Morosi. But what he does very well is that he gets there, gets to the point of the ball and makes himself incredibly big at that moment. And then he follows it up with a double save. First one down to his left. Again, the argument could be that if this was followed up, someone might say that he hasn't parried it into a particularly good area, but I think he actually means to parry it into this area. The reason being is I think if he parries it into a quote good area, there's someone there that may be able to tap it into an empty net. So he parries it back out in front of him. But then the second save is phenomenal. Really quick down to his right hand side. Really, really sharp. Gets a good strong right hand to it and manages to keep it out.
Andrew Fisher at full stretch to keep out Chris Hussey's 25-yard free kick. MK Dons bagging a draw at Cheltenham. It ended up being a crucial save, this one.
Yes, indeed. This is a classic. Was it up, down and over? Is that the one, Matt?
Up, over and down, mate.
So up, over and down. For me, this is a textbook. Takes up a really good position. He's made sure that he's kept his side of the goal safe. He hasn't moved early. He's waited until the ball is struck, moves incredibly quick to his left-hand side and makes it look really, really comfortable. Goes full stretch, but you always feel like he's got it in control. And it just shows you that you don't need to go early, certainly when it is 25 yards out. Yes, if they manage to get it up and into the top corner, then sometimes there's very little you can do. But I think if you do it correctly, you stay true, you hold that position, and then you go the moment you see it going over the wall, you can still cover the majority of the goal. And in this case, get right into the corner and make a crucial save.
Into League Two, a big clean sheet from James Belshaw against Crawley. Eight saves from the Bristol Rovers stopper to give the Pirates successive victories for the first time since December 2020. Barrow's Paul Farman also with a clean sheet at Oldham. Saves from Jamie Bowden and Alan Sheehan in the first half preserved what was an eventual 3-0 win. And Stevenage and Swindon sharing the spoils. And so too did the goalkeepers. Jojo Wallacott with one heck of a save from one heck of a strike from Chris Lyons, and Joseph Anang following suit from Jack Payne's deflected effort moments later.
Do you know what? I don't know which one is better. I've watched both of these so many times. And look, Jojo Wallacott's been on fire since he's gone there. Credit to him. And it just shows you, we spoke about this plenty of times on the pod, that you sometimes get goalkeepers who might be a number two, number three in the championship, like he was for so long, never really going to get that opportunity, never necessarily got the loans that maybe he could have got at a younger age. But now he's gone there and he really has stepped into the role and he's just producing save after save. And certainly this save is fantastic. It's a brilliant strike. You know, as much as I don't really talk about the the outfield players all that much. Credit to him. He's caught it on the half volley. It is rising into the top corner, just ready for him to run off and celebrate. I'm sure that 90% of the people watching this will have wanted that to happen. But the way in which Jojo gets across, gets a hand to it, really acrobatic save, a save that not many goalkeepers make, I'm sure. But it is a brilliant, brilliant save. In saying that, there is an argument to be said that a Nang save is even better. And the only reason I say that is the fact that it does take a deflection. So it changes the trajectory of the ball. It's dipping over him into the top corner. And again, I don't think there are many goalkeepers that make this save. But the way in which he maneuvers his body, gets back, gets a big right hand to it. Again, a truly phenomenal save.
And finally, in League Two, Walsall nabbing a point at Valley Parade. And that was thanks to Carl Rushworth. Ollie Crankshaw just needed, all he needed to do was tap it home. But the man on loan from Brighton had other ideas, didn't he?
He did indeed. And you spotted him turning around and asking, how did he save that? And it is a good question. And the reason he saved it is that he made a really good decision, a decision to come out and spread. The ball was crossed along the 6-yard line. And it's one of them where really the defenders should deal with it. Ordinarily, as a goalkeeper, you're taught to turn in, set on your line, and then wait for the shot if it's coming. But he made the decision. He could see that the defenders weren't necessarily in the correct position. He's then made the decision to engage, and the timing is perfect. He gets to 6 yards out, gets to the foot of the ball, spreads very, very well, and it is a brilliant, brilliant save.
The satisfaction of making those saves is almost matched, isn't it, in seeing the reaction of the player that you saved from?
Do you know one of the things I love most is when the player came and congratulated you? Because it was very much making it known to everybody around you that it was a top, top save. So actually, I fully appreciate that, where either they make it very obvious to the camera that they're asking the question, how did he save that? That's up there as well. But yeah, they actually go and congratulate the goalkeeper. That's something I think every goalkeeper appreciates.
GK's on the way. I say GK's on the way. GK's on the way. I say GK's on the way.
Yes, it is that time in the show where, Richard, normally it's you who introduces this segment, but we're changing it around because you're over there and I'm over here. So it's just easier this way, okay?
That works for me.
And the movers and shakers up until deadline day were Alex Runnerson. He went from Arsenal to OH Leuven on loan. David Mitchell from Clyde to Hibernian. Robin Olsen from Roma to Sheffield United on a season-long loan. Ron Thorben Hoffman from Bayern Munich to Sunderland on a season-long loan. Christian Walton, Brighton to Ipswich, also on a season-long loan. The same for Joao Virginia from Everton to Sporting Lisbon. And Andrew Lonergan, who we hadn't mentioned before, he has gone from West Brom to Everton.
Well, there you go. Plenty of deadline day dramatics. And certainly in the case of Robin Olsen, and I'll mention a few of these, but Robin Olsen, of course, Sheffield United waited until the very, very last minute. There was a lot of conversations about potentially Senny Dieng going to Sheffield United. Now, had that have happened, no doubt we'd have seen a big merry-go-round, a real domino effect of goalkeepers. But the fact it didn't, the fact they went for Robin Olsen didn't really change too much on deadline day. But certainly they brought in a very, very experienced goalkeeper. Of course, we spoke very positively about him on the pod last season for the games that he did play for Everton. I guess the only question will be whether he can do exactly what is needed when it comes to the distribution side of things, given how Sheffield United are likely to play this season. But certainly to bring him in on loan for the season, they've got someone very, very reliable there. The one that did interest me a lot was Hoffman going to Sunderland. And I'll be honest, not a goalkeeper I know loads about. Certainly there was a lot of discussions to whether Sunderland were going to do anything or not. And Patterson certainly came in and did very well. And of course, Berge kept so many clean sheets last season. But the fact they have brought in Hoffman again, sometimes you see this where there is a connection or there is somebody who has a bit more of an idea as to what's going on in the German goalkeeping market and maybe knowing that there is an opportunity for something like this to happen. And certainly for Hoffman himself, I'm sure this is a huge opportunity for him to get to play for and certainly in an environment like Sunderland. So I'm really, really interested to see how he gets on. Christian Walton going to Ipswich. So Ipswich, of course, I think it was 19 signings that they made in the end, including two goalkeepers. So it'll be an interesting battle between Palacki and, of course, Christian Walton. He's had a couple of loans in the Championship before. But again, another really nice environment for him to get games if he is to be the number one. So a very good signing for them. And last but not least, good friend of the show, Mr. Andy Lonergan. Fantastic move. I mean, he is, for me, and we've mentioned this many times, he's transitioned into that perfect number three figure. And I say that with loads of respect in the fact that he's a great guy. He's still a top, top goalkeeper, but he is a great guy. So, of course, as that number three, if he needed to step in and play, can he do it? Well, yes, he can. We saw that he did last season for Stoke in the cup game that he played. So you're going to get quality around the place, but certainly as a human being, to bring someone like that in to play that role, you know, we see it elsewhere with Rob Elliott at Watford, Scott Carson at Man City, Lee Grant at Man United, for instance. Certainly Andy Lonergan is very much in that mould. And I believe the link as well with David Lucas going in as under 23 goalkeeper coach Everton would have helped given their relationship at Preston previously.
Good stuff, Richard. Thank you very much for that. The Hoffman one is interesting, isn't it? I was trying to think if it's ever happened before that a player has gone from Bayern Munich to Sunderland. Can't think if that's happened before.
I have no idea. Certainly not a goalkeeper that I can think of. So if any of our listeners do know, please do let us know.
And deadline day for you, the last time we spoke, of course, you were rushing off because there was potentially loads to talk about, but potentially nothing to talk about. Just run us through your day from the moment you left this studio to work on some of those possible but not deals.
Yeah, well, do you know what? The two that were still outstanding and that we had a feeling may happen was, of course, Sunderland and Sheffield United. So the moment the news came out that Sunderland looked very likely they were going to do Hoffman and Sheffield United looked very likely they were going to do Olsen, that then led us towards the latter and knowing that there was going to be very little. But it would have been interesting. Let's say Sunderland, there was a good chance that they'd have gone for someone British-based. And of course, Sheffield United were interested in Senny Dieng. I'm pretty sure that that is true. Then, of course, it could have set off all sorts. Now, what tends to happen, and I'm aware of this, and maybe things I can't necessarily say on the pod, where there was potential interest on the final day. But of course, it's not quite as simple as that, because it's all good and well that a team might say, right, we need a keeper. We're going to go and get such and such. But if they're the number one at another club, then again, it's like houses. You know, if you're going to buy one house, then the other person needs to buy their house and so on and so forth. So you get that chain. And unfortunately, I think where there might have been one or two of those situations going on, they were never really that realistic, purely because as much as on deadline day, a team might pay that much more money for a goalkeeper, the money's useless if they don't necessarily feel they've got a number one that can step into the number one shoes and do the job until January. Because the rules being what they are, there's not a lot you can do. Once the window closes, if you don't have your squad in place, yes, you can rely on the emergency loan system sometimes, but certainly it's not the way that clubs want to go. There's a lot of risk to that. So a lot of the time you can be in a really, really difficult position if you do not have your outright number one in place.
Knowing the sport and the business as you do, does it ever surprise you that we always get to deadline day? This has been going on for years as well, hasn't it? Before it was made into such a massive thing by Sky Sports with all the yellow branding, there was always deadline day before where loads of signings were being made. I remember getting home from school and checking teletext and just seeing reams and reams of pages of all these players who'd moved on deadline day. Does it ever surprise you that it is left until the very, very last minute?
I mean, I'm understanding it more now. You know, I guess if I'm going to give a similarity, it's probably when, you know, we'd have homework to do and we could do it 3 weeks in advance, but we do it on the final night. You could use that as an analogy. But I think it's more the fact that you're just forced to make a decision. Now, if everything's in place, then it will often be that clubs know they can often get possibly the best deal on deadline day, but it does all come to a crunch and everything has to happen. And suddenly decisions that might have taken weeks can happen very, very quickly. And then if a player is moving on, suddenly you have to bring someone in very quickly. So that might mean that you're paying a little bit more for the player that you're then going for. And so I understand it more and more that it does bring that sense of urgency to the situation. But yeah, you look at it logically, sometimes it doesn't make sense. Sometimes deals could have been done so far in advance. And what you found is that the teams that have been in transition that have maybe been bringing in a lot of players in August, not always necessarily their fault, but if they've been doing a lot last minute, they may not have got off to the best start of the season, or the first few weeks you have a bit of a mishmash in terms of the team they're putting out week in, week out. So for a lot of teams, I think we're going to see that once September kicks in, the league starts. Now that's great, but if you haven't got off to a fantastic start, then you could be playing catch up.
Okay, Richard, thank you.
Matthew, thank you.
We will, of course, be back next Monday when all the EFL action gets going. Again, there are some international games going on too. If anything major happens in those, we'll cover all that action too, won't we?
We will indeed.
This has been the Goalkeepers Union podcast, Between the Sticks. Keepers
away!